Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia e-range of EVs and PHEVs.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Five 1551 is our text number. Sarah, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
First of all, congratulations. 4 years, the mental health course, mental health nursing degree at Trinity College Dublin.
Yeah.
I presume you spent, just in fees, it's probably 16,000. Would it be?
In and around that, I think, yeah.
You also would have, because it's a nursing degree, you would have been on placement, which effectively means you were working during the last few years.
Okay. Yeah.
Training is training to be a nurse. But you got a letter from Trinity College, the librarian, to say...
It was an email.
An email.
Yeah.
After 4 years, 18,000, working 16,000, working, that doesn't include your living fees, working as well as studying, working outside the college up to what, 70 or 80 hours a week?
From first to third year, yeah, I would have done in and around 70 hours a week, yeah.
And Trinity College have told you you cannot graduate next Wednesday because you owe them 37 quid.
So what happened was I'd received an email from a lovely lady in the library just basically stating that I had owed 22 euro on my library account and that I had a book outstanding. So I paid the 22 euro and, I did forget to return the book, but
of course, yeah.
I didn't really receive any more correspondence from them until Monday evening. I didn't even check my emails because I don't use my college email anymore. So I checked it then just by random on Tuesday evening, and it just basically said that if the book wasn't returned by close of business on the Tuesday, or if I pay a fine of up to 130 euro, that I wouldn't be able to graduate next Wednesday with my class. So when I had received the email, of course, I replied immediately and said that I would send the book by registered post the next morning. And I received an email back then from a lady in the graduation committee just basically stating very rudely that I would not be graduating next Wednesday because of this, and gave me a link to apply for graduation in April of next year, which would be on my own without any of my class. So, I kind of pleaded for it then. You know, my dad has booked flights over from the UK and I've everything paid for, and I just basically begging her to kind of reconsider it. But in the meantime, she's gone home at that stage. So in the meantime, I couldn't find the book after 2 years.
Joined the club.
So I went online and I bought the book online, and I sent it to the lady in the library.
Oh, well done. Well, the brand new book.
But she then replied a lovely email the next morning saying that they don't usually accept books from outside sources, but seeing as I'd already bought it, that she would tell the graduation committee that my account was cleared. So I presumed then, that all was fine, but I just wanted to double check with the graduating committee. So I emailed her back again just to confirm that I was still able to go ahead, and she just again very rudely wrote back and just said, no, you won't be graduating,
Well, this
and that
is,
was just it.
If this is the email, the correct one, dear, and it's your name in it, it's not Sarah, obviously, because we haven't got your parchment yet, the one that you've earned with blood, sweat and tears over four years and lots of money and lots of time. Dear, you can attend on the day if you wish with your dad in your gown, but you won't be called up and you won't be conferred.
What happened was, because I was panicking yesterday, it was kind of a moment of weakness, I suppose. I emailed her and asked her would I still be able to attend, because I'd paid for my account, get photographs with my family and with my class, and that was her reply to that email. Then when I received that email, I just thought, if she had said to me, God, Kira, Sarah, I'm really sorry, but this is just how it is. If she had just been more nice about it, I would kind of just took it on the chin and just said, right, fine. But it's just her manner. I just felt it was, after my 4 years in college.
So the offer was you could hire out your gown. You could organise, your dad was flying in from England, is that correct, it's due to fly in. You could go into the exam hall in Trinity College and sit there watching, and with your confreres, your fellow students or whatever, and the pomp and ceremony begins. In Latin, Trinity also have this archaic policy of you are called, when each graduation for each study or each department is called out. You're called out not alphabetically, but you're called out on the basis of your results. So you know, if you're the first person called out, you got the best results in your class. If you're the second person, third person, it goes down like that. It's an archaic, medieval, you graduate. But anyway, they say you can attend on the day if you wish, as I said, with your gown, but you won't be called up and you won't be conferred. Your parchment is not printed and cannot be collected. Regards.
Yeah, but because I had said to her, could I even go up in the day, just to, you know, mark the moment with my family. So that was, you know, I had asked her that just, you know, I was just panicking yesterday evening. So that was her reply to that. So, you know, when I seen the rude reply, I got on to, you know, every avenue I could think of in Trinity, and I hadn't heard anything back until today, you know.
And the other thing people might not be aware of, like if you did not, they do it sequentially, as I say, by your grades. If you get a first, you're at the top, you're at the front line, and it works its way down, even though everyone has graduated legitimately. But your name is called out, everything is called out in sequence. In other words, second chair, third chair. So if you were, say, in the first row, the person beside you would be called up, they'd come back down. You'd be sitting there and the person next to you would be called up. So people would be saying, oh, they're after forgetting about that woman in the middle, even if they didn't know you.
Yeah, I don't even know if she meant I could go into the graduation. I wanted to get photographed on the grounds at Trinity. So I don't know whether she meant I could go into the, you know, the actual ceremony or just stand outside. I don't know.
So just to be clear, the amount of the book that you lost, mislaid, was worth €37.
Well, I bought a brand new for €37 online.
But did you know that Trinity College, the library, is the largest, stunning library in Ireland, but it is a legal deposit library since 1801. And it is entitled to claim, without charge, a copy of every book and periodical published in the Republic of Ireland and the United Kingdom. Do you believe that? They get the book. They get the book free, and they get the first one free anyway.
Yeah.
Other libraries, Dublin City Library, they have to buy books. But Trinity it's known as a legal deposit. There's only two of them in this part of the world. I think the other one is Oxford. And it exists from the Act of Union 1801. Trinity College, as a legal deposit library since 1801, is entitled to claim without charge a copy of every book and periodical published in the Republic of Ireland and the United Kingdom. Wow. So, where Sarah, we rang them because we were our jaws were dropping that they would that they would embarrass you, that they would stop you graduating next Wednesday, to say your parchment is not printed. You can turn up with your family and your dad if you want, but you won't be called up and you won't be conferred. We rang them with asking for a statement about this £37, even though they now have the book. And the fact that they were unrelenting. Now, they have relented, I understand.
Yeah, they have.
Have they emailed you?
I've received an email and a phone call just before I came on air here. And basically, they did apologise for, I suppose, the lack of communication and empathy.
But in fairness, it is in their rules. It shouldn't be in their rules in this day and age, especially what students are going through in the last 2 years. It should not be in your in the rules that if you owe £37, even though you sent them the book, that should stop you graduating. They're not that badly stuck for money in Trinity that they would the punishment for owing or mislaying a book worth £30 or whatever is to stop you graduating and embarrass you. That is completely disproportionate. Disproportionate in this day and age. Now, I wonder, would Trinity have relented rapidly and you will graduate next Wednesday, but they should just get rid of that rule.
Yeah, I know. And
it's a shocking rule in this day and age.
The manner of the lady that was in touch with me, you know,
when you go into the website, Sarah, it says quite clearly these are the rules as approved by the board and fellows of Trinity College.
Yeah.
These are their rules. They're not this young lady. Well, it was a lady or a man. It's not their rules. It's in they've actually written it on paper. That if you owe the library anything, that's the way I'm reading it.
You can't graduate.
You can't graduate.
No.
Shocking.
Yeah.
And like, anyway. So it's gone now. Congratulations.
Gone.
Tell us.
Thank you so much.
And I know you're working now. You're in work today.
I'm actually sitting in the toilet here. I'm off the ward. Yeah, I'm in work today.
And have you managed to get a day off for next Wednesday, which is now
officially... Oh, I booked it off, I booked it off weeks ago, you know.
And how long is your shift today in the hospital?
13 hours.
Wow. Mm. Well done. And what prompted you to study mental health nursing?
I worked in healthcare homes for a couple of years, and I worked in nursing homes, especially in the area of dementia care, so I just really, really enjoyed that. So I... That's what kind of pushed me to go and do it, you know.
And it's a fantastic university. There's no
two
ways about
it. And you know, I haven't got a bad word to say.
Exactly.
I really enjoyed my time there.
So why are they letting themselves down with these petty rules that upset people so much?
Yeah.
And by the way, did you tell your dad? Did you tell your dad?
I haven't got the heart to tell him. No, I didn't. But I would not tell him anything now. So,
What were you thinking of doing, Sarah, when you say, "Oh, they must have forgot my name," or "I was out"?
No, I really don't know.
You would have had to do slip out to the loo just before your name would have been due, and you come back and say to your dad, "Did they call out my name?"
Yeah.
And you said, "No." Oh, they must have seen that I wasn't here.
Oh, he's hard to hear him anyway. So he probably wouldn't have even heard.
Well, above all, Sarah, to you and all your classmates, congratulations. It's
Thank
a fantastic
you so much.
Course.
For all your help.
And it's a fantastic sacrifice you've made in the last 4 years, especially in the last 2 years, what the country is going through. We now have a fully qualified, after 4 years, and I'm sure you'll go on for even more elements of masters and PhDs. We've a fully qualified mental health nurse, and we're blessed as a nation to have people like you working 13 hours today. And I think Trinity, as a gesture, just say it, no big deal. As of now, that rule is gone. No ifs or buts for library books that they would stop you graduate. Did you owe them, just in case, because we will get it in, do you owe them any other money?
No, I don't, no.
Are you sure?
No, fully paid.
You didn't crash the Trinity ball?
Absolutely not. No.
Okay. You probably hadn't time to go to the Trinity Ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Sarah, I wish you well, and I wish
Trinity
would come into the 21st PC post COVID world and abolish those petty rules. Thank you, Sarah. Back to
Great.
Work.
Thank I'm sorry. You so
can,
much.
Can you have a cup of tea or a sandwich or a panini or something?
I'm just back off my lunch now.
Okay.
So I'll go back to work now.
Okay, you can leave the loo now. And I know your supervisor, and thanks to him or her, they agreed to let you do this call because it's so important. Okay, congratulations again.
So much, thank you. Bye.
That's Sarah. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Susan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
A remarkable book that you sent in to us landed on our desk, and it's entitled I'm the Boss of Me, Surviving Infidelity. Now, even the chapters alone would give you an insight into what the book is about. Suspicion, confrontation, denial, acceptance, turning point, health shock, financial struggles, letting go to you, the affair partner, reconciliation and conclusion. Susan, what prompted you to write this book?
It was very therapeutic for me to write it. All of those feelings were inside of me, and just putting it out on paper helped with my healing. So I found it very therapeutic.
Yourself and your husband married, 35 years, together for 40?
That's right.
So childhood sweethearts.
Indeed, yes.
And up to the time this bombshell was discovered by you, was it a happy marriage in your eyes?
It was, Joe. It was a very happy marriage. I was very happy, and he was a great man and a great husband and father.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was more than surprised when this bomb dropped.
Well, tell us when the bomb dropped and how you discovered it.
Well, I discovered it on his phone. I saw some messages. He was acting kind of not himself.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed a change in his behaviour. He was very distant, And he seemed to be going out a lot, which I put down to work.
Okay.
And because I trusted him, I believed him when he said where he was going, you know, to work.
And how did you discover there was another woman in his life?
It was just his behaviour, and he seemed to be on the phone a lot. So one day I was able to get a hold of the phone and saw the evidence there for myself.
And did you confront him?
I did, but if denial set in, unfortunately. But
on his part?
Yeah, on his part, okay. Yeah. I was totally in shock, humiliated, uncontrollable, shaken, couldn't believe what I just read. You know, not from a man who I thought would never, ever hurt any of us. Yeah.
So he denied it, and did you still believe it? Did you accept his denial?
I did accept his denial because he was so upfront about it. I actually felt guilty for even thinking that he was having an affair.
Mm.
You know, but yeah.
So when did he admit?
Oh, it wasn't until a few months later when he admitted. And then...
And what prompted his admission?
Well, it was me kind of asking a lot of questions because I knew something wasn't right. I knew he wasn't being who he normally is. And he had finally admitted it, which was a terrible blow because everything I had... Mm-hmm. Been thinking about was now true.
And did he reveal the full extent of the relationship with the other woman?
No, he wouldn't talk to me at all about that. I tried to get him to talk to him about to me about that, but he just wouldn't. You know, and it took a long time for him to come around about that. I think it was just the shock of being caught and the shame. Yeah, so it was a long time before we got to there.
And when did he come to admit that he was in love with this other woman?
Oh, it was kind of shortly after he admitted to the affair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I knew he seemed to be very besotted by the other person. And to him, he was in love.
And when you heard that?
Oh, I was absolutely distraught and disbelief and humiliated as well and felt so ashamed. I don't know why I felt ashamed, but I did. But it was a bitter pill to swallow.
And Susan, when all of this is unravelling, are you going through this on your own?
I am.
You didn't confide in a... Family,
no,
friends?
I didn't confide in the family or any friends because I just felt so ashamed. I was afraid people would think I was a horrible person. But it wasn't until many months later that I did confide in my family. And I was sorry I didn't do it earlier.
Okay.
Because the support I got was just fantastic. Now, my three sons at the time, they were very supportive of me. They were great.
But you confronted him. He now admits that I'm in love with somebody else. And he leaves the family home.
He does, yes. He leaves the family home. Yes.
And how was that departure?
Well, for me and the children, it was very hard. It was very, very hard. You know, because I thought then, oh, that's it now. He's definitely gone where the marriage is over. 40 years of marriage down the drain.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah, it was very upsetting. It was very traumatic for us all.
And did he leave quietly, or was there?
No, he left quietly. There was no big argument. I knew there was no point in arguing with him. His mind was made up and he was going. And I was advised by very good people I met on an infidelity site, just let him go because he's lost himself. There's no point in me trying to take his problems and make them better. I was only making things worse.
He had lost himself.
He had lost himself, yeah. They call it in the fog, you know. But he had lost himself, yes.
And did you know this woman?
No, I didn't know her.
Okay.
No.
And did you ever meet her, do you think?
No, I don't think so, no.
Okay. And can I ask, because it's a remarkable book for its honesty. It really is.
Yes.
And its rawness. And that's you know, your hurt and your shame, which is totally unwarranted on your part.
But absolutely.
But you've explained it. Were you then, did he go and live with this woman, do you know?
He did. He went and lived with this. They lived together, yes. Like, he was gone from the family home and he moved in with the other woman. So I just had to take care of me then and the lads and just do the best we could. Yeah.
But that wasn't the end of it.
No.
So taken now on the one and one aspect which is very serious, you had health issues.
I did. Yeah. Yes.
And
yes.
And how did you reestablish, or sorry, how did he reestablish contact, or?
Well, how he got contact with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we needed to get some paper signed for the mortgage, and that's how he came with me to sign papers.
Okay.
You know.
And what a conversation developed.
Yeah, we were chatting away, and I could see kind of my husband that I knew, the husband that I was mourning, the husband I knew, mm-hmm. was there on the day with me. It was very awkward, very traumatic for both of us. I didn't know what to say. I hadn't seen him in a few years, you know. But it was good to see him.
And along at that stage, had you been separated, so to speak? And
I think it was nearly 4 years at that stage.
And what was his life at that time, do you know, in terms of relationships?
I'm not quite sure. I'd say he was, in his world, he was very happy at the time. But because we didn't keep in contact, I wasn't sure what was going on there. I was just trying to keep my life together, particularly after the illness.
Now, you reestablished your relationship.
We did, yeah.
And what is involved there? Is that forgiveness? Is that...
Yeah, because I knew the man, I knew he was a good man, and I knew...
Okay.
I was trying to find that man again. He left the other person at this stage.
Ah, okay.
And he was living somewhere else. But we began to meet up, and we would kind of what we would call go on dates.
Okay.
And that was good, and that lasted for a good few weeks. And during those dates, we talked a lot. We talked everything out, and I knew by him he was ashamed. I knew by him he had made a wrong choice.
Mm-hmm.
But those meetings were great. We went mostly to the seaside, which I find is very therapeutic.
All right.
And that was good.
Well, there's another on page 52 of your book. I asked him if he was happy, and he said sort of. I asked him what he meant by sort of, and either he was or he wasn't. He went on to say, I was in a bad place. I was messed up and thought if I did things differently, I would feel better, but I don't. He felt life was passing him by. My husband was living a fantasy, and it was the allure of a new life. Not so much the other woman. It was a thrill of something new, dangerous, and excitement.
Exciting.
And, but then you remember the exact words. he was sensitive. I'll jump forward a few. He was sensitive with his words, and his voice was the way I remembered it. The beast took him over for many years, but the beast had died inside him now and had released my husband back to his old self. And that was back.
Yes.
So your relationship began again.
It began again then, yes. Yes.
And when you say the beast, what do you mean by the beast that took him over?
Yeah, when they're in the affair, they change, their personality changes, and their words can be quite hard. And I knew some words my husband was saying, that's not like him, that's not him. So he was in his own little bubble, and he wasn't who I knew. He wasn't the man I knew.
And when you, back to this phrase again, when you said to him, are you happy? And he said, sort of. You hung on to that.
I did. That made me very happy, and I don't know why I say that. But in my vision, I thought they were living a beautiful life.
Yeah.
And they were so happy. Everything was going great. So to hear him say, sort of, it made me happy, yes. Because during all this time, Joe, I still wanted to save our marriage. I know that might sound strange to some people, but I was still trying to save our marriage, hoping to save our marriage. And by getting back with him and meeting up, things were going very well.
And was divorce ever mentioned?
Yes. I went and inquired about a divorce, and so did he. But the two of us didn't go any further. But yes, we did consult solicitors about divorce.
Okay. And after this sort of conversation, contact was established again.
Yes, yes. That's when we went on our dates.
Okay.
Yeah.
And can I ask, what is the situation now, Susan?
Like how we are today.
Yeah, yeah.
Today, I have to be honest, we're in a great place.
Okay.
We've total transparency with each other, and if anything is bothering us, we talk it out. And I have to say, we're really happy and in a very good place. And we decided if we're going to work on the marriage, we'll work on the future together, not the past.
At the final page of the book, I'm rushing forward here to the end of the book. To my husband for everything that he continues to do in making our marriage a happy one.
Yes. Because of the affair, which I would prefer didn't happen, it brought out a person in me I didn't know was inside me. I'm more confident and stronger now than I've ever felt in my life.
Okay.
And I like the feelings now that I have about myself. It took a long time to work on myself, but I'm in a good place today.
Now, I read out the chapters earlier on.
Yes.
And one of them that jumps out is, to you, the affair partner.
Yes.
And what do you want to tell the listeners what you say in that chapter?
Well, I just say, I never sent it to the affair partner.
Okay.
I just wrote it down because it was therapeutic for me.
Okay.
And I was beginning to move on with my life. I just mentioned just briefly that my world as I knew it has changed.
Mm-hmm.
There's no winners here, only broken knives and pain. I'm just trying to see here. I was wondering why my husband would have abandoned me for the affair partner.
Mm-hmm.
And can she see why I would be angry? Just things like that, you know. But I never sent it.
Okay.
I just wanted that for myself. It was very therapeutic.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. And some letters are better never sent.
I never, ever intended to send a letter.
I have suffered multiple losses, you wrote to her. Loss of the past because the marriage and memories are now tainted. Loss of the present because my life, as I knew it, is gone. Loss of the future because my vision of what my husband was and moving through life together has been ripped away.
Yes.
I wondered what was so wrong with me that he abandoned me for you, his affair partner. Are you angry towards this woman?
I was in the beginning. I was very much so in the beginning. But I'm more so angry with my husband.
Okay.
You know, like I was very angry with her because in my eyes she did contribute to the potential dissolution of our family. So, but I do blame my husband.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. Does he know you've written the book?
He does, yes.
He
said he was very, very proud of me for it.
And has he read it?
Yeah. I don't think so.
Okay.
You know, now I know it's there beside him, but I don't think so. But he did say to me he was very proud.
And would you worry about him reading it?
A part of me would, because I don't think he probably would like some of what I wrote. But then again, he owns it, and he knows he won't be surprised at what I've written.
Okay.
Yeah, so...
Does he know you sent the book to Liveline?
He does.
Does he know yes. You're on Live Line?
He does, yes. Yeah.
And what did he say? If anything.
He had mixed emotions about it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it is truly a remarkable book.
Thank you.
I know, and I'm saying this, the book is not available yet. Is it? Is
no.
it? Is it available? You're going to put it up on Amazon, but
yes.
I think that's the query we're going to get. Where can we get the book? It's called I'm the Boss of Me. Why is it called that?
My granddaughter was speaking to her father one day, and she was getting into a little bit of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And she had her hands on her hips, and she was saying to him, "I'm the boss of me." And I just thought that would be a great title for the book.
Yeah, I think it comes from Malcolm. I think it comes from Malcolm in the Middle. You're not the boss of me now. And that was you. That was you recapturing your confidence, your ownership of your own life.
Absolutely. I had to work very hard. I got a lot of help in the end and got a lot of counselling. And I love the person I am today, to be honest with you, Joe. You know, I feel more stronger and I just feel great.
And does it help if I said to you, like, would you ever trust him again?
Yes, I do trust him. I do trust him because he's been making our lives very, very happy since we got back together.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has anyone else read the book, apart from your publishers, obviously?
A few people have read the book, and I've had a good few feedback from it. So some people have thanked me for letting them know that they weren't going mad. It's not their fault.
Yeah.
They did nothing wrong.
Yeah. Well, yes, it was remarkable. How is your health, more importantly, at this stage?
I'm doing very well at the moment. The last mammogram was great.
Okay.
So I'm doing very well. So I'm very happy about that.
Okay, I wanted to acknowledge that because that's part of the book as well and the pain
you
were going through. Well, Susan, it's called I'm the Boss of Me, Surviving Infidelity. I would see this being read by relationship counsellors. I'd see it being read by so many different people for its insight and the fact that you came through it, that both of you came through it. And you've explained how you are today. I think it's a lesson for so many people. But Susan, not your real name, I hasten to add. thanks a million.
And
above all, continued improved health and continued best wishes to your three beautiful sons and your husband. Susan, good afternoon.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Now, Susan's book is not available. Unfortunately, it hasn't been published. I don't know if she offered it to an Irish publisher. It's a slim volume, but a very important volume. That means you won't be able to get it easily enough in bookshops, which we all want to support, or indeed libraries. But you can get it on Amazon, I'm told, and by just simply banging in the name, I'm the Boss of Me. I'm the Boss of Me, Surviving Infidelity, and the name that Susan doesn't want to use her real name, obviously, but the name on the front of the book is Helen. I'm the Boss of Me, Surviving Infidelity by Helen. Now, maybe an Irish publisher will, I don't know whether Susan wants wider distribution, but maybe an Irish publisher will come along and say, we'll publish it and we'll put it into, or maybe bookshops will come to her and ask them for supplies of it directly, but I don't think that's how it's done in the business, because it would be great to see this widely available, because it's a very honest book and a very raw book and a very hard book to write and a very hard book to read as well, I suspect, but it's well worth entering into the canon, and I think Trinity will get a free copy of it as well under the 1601 library deposit. By the way, just I'm going back to that. If you were, it's called the legal deposit, and this is back to the caller at the start, Sarah, who was told she couldn't graduate next Wednesday. She could come in her gown and bring her family, but she wouldn't be called up after 4 years studying. And you heard it, and working extraordinarily hard to be a mental health nurse, which she now is, and is working there in a 13-hour shift today. Legal deposit, and Trinity said, you can't graduate because there's a book missing. You never brought it back. It's worth 37 quid. She immediately went on, probably Amazon, bought the book, posted it to Trinity College, and they said, we don't accept books this way. But they've relented now, and they've said, but legal deposit, which has existed in English law since 1662, ensures that the published output of the UK and Ireland is collected, preserved and made available within the six legal deposit libraries for present and future generations. These libraries are the British Library, the National Library of Scotland, the National Library of Wales, the University of Cambridge, the University of Oxford, and Trinity, not the National Library Ireland, it's Trinity College Ireland are the beneficiaries there. And most books internationally, because it have UK partners, probably end up in Trinity as well, free, gratis and for nothing. That does not mean they have to buy in extra books. Of course, they do. But hopefully they will get rid of that ludicrous, petty regulation in this day and age. OK, this is Imelda May on Liveline on September 29th. You want to start a campaign for what?
I'm not on a major quest, but I heard there was talks about having a bank holiday, a new bank holiday, and I heard there was a one-off for all the people on the front line, which is an amazing idea as a thank you. But there's something that's been close to my heart for a long time, is that I think there should be an annual bank holiday for Bridget's Day.
The 4th of February.
The 4th of February, Bridget's Day. And I think we should have a matron saint of Ireland, as well as the patron saint. And wouldn't that put out a beautiful message to the world?
And Imelda May is going to get her way, it looks like. By the way, it's the first time we've mentioned Imelda since her incredible mother, Madge. Madge Clabby, she died yesterday week, and condolences to Imelda and Tony, her husband Andy, Maria, Brendan, Liddell, and Fintan, and all the extended family. Madge Clabby was a legend, way beyond the Liberties, and a gorgeous woman to meet. But anyway, Imelda May is going to get her way, because it's been mentioned a few times, but Leo Varadkar this morning again mentioned it, that it's too short notice, and especially with the numbers at the minute, to have the extra bank holiday on the 1st of February. It's the Feast of St. Bridget, but it's also the feast of, as Imelda said, that day of the Celtic goddess. It's a woman's day, and Imbolc, isn't it? And but he said from the following year, it looks like they're going to go for February the 4th as an extra annual May Day, not in May, but in February, and in honour of Bridget and in honour of women. And it's as the Tánaiste said this morning, it's the first bank holiday that will be in honour of a woman. Now, he then said, well, we can't, under the current circumstances and organised everything, it's too late to do it for February, which is, 9 weeks away. But we are thinking very strongly of the fact that St. Patrick's Day next March falls on a Thursday. We are thinking of adding the Friday as a one-off this year to thank frontline workers. So it would be a four-day weekend, a four-day weekend. Tom, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
What do you think of this idea now for a four-day weekend?
Well, I suppose, firstly, I'd like to say congratulations to your first speaker, and she was eloquent. And the best of luck to her in her career.
Oh, that's the mental health nurse, Sarah.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes, yeah.
Incredible woman.
Now, about the bank holiday, there used to be an old story one time that if somebody didn't believe what somebody else was saying, they might say that I wouldn't believe what was in their radio. Well, or what I heard in their radio. Well, I'm a bit like that now with my own radio, because I can't believe what's going on about this thing about honouring the people of our front line in retail and hospitals and laboratories and everything else, Gardaí, whatever. But is there anything for those people? Like, I mean, there's going to be a bank holiday which seems to make it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday for people that would be 9 to 5 or office people, people that might have worked from home and so forth during COVID.
Okay.
And what about the front line people? Because, you see, in a hospital, approximately half the staff is going to have to work.
That's a good point, actually. That's a good point.
And even that girl that was recently qualified might find herself having to work that, having been on Tuesday and Wednesday as well. She might have to work Thursday.
But would they not get paid extra or time off in lieu? Or?
Well, they get paid, but maybe that's not what the frontline workers want, in the sense of having to work again to get paid. You see, half the staff will get paid. It's okay if people volunteer to work it. But maybe people won't want to work it, but yet positions have to be filled.
You're saying the whole idea of a bank holiday for frontline workers is an odd way.
Yeah, well, I think it's some sort of gesture, but it seems to suit people that work 9 to 5
Stay there, Tom. Sean Drugan. Sean is a restaurateur in Dublin. Sean, good afternoon. You own the Vintage Kitchen there on Poole Beg Street in Dublin.
That's correct. Yeah.
Is Hawkins House gone yet?
It's gone, yes.
Thank you. Can we have a? Can you break open a bottle of champagne to see that monstrosity? So we see the hole that's in that whole block there, Sean, in front of you. Have you seen the depth of the?
It's absolutely amazing. It'll be filled in with concrete by next March. It'll take that long.
Oh, it's not an underground car park, no.
No, there's no underground car park going into it. It's just going to be levelled off.
Because it's so big. I asked, it's the Irish Times look out on it. I'm surprised we haven't seen more photographs. It's the biggest building site, apart from the Children's Hospital, I'd say, and Intel in the country at the minute. But it's by far the deepest, and it looks like Dublin could fall into it.
It's absolutely massive. Okay. And
it's about 50 yards from the Liffey, so I presume that's where the concrete... But anyway, that's a complete aside. Bye-bye Hawkins House. Bring back the Theatre Royal, says I. Never, even though I never see it. But Sean, you've a great reputation down there in Poole, but you really have. And it's hard to get a booking, I'm told. What do you think of this four-day bank holiday idea?
Well, number one, like why the extremities in these things? Like, you know, the other thing is absolutely have a bank holiday for the people who put their lives on the line for the last, you know, 19 mm-hmm. months or whatever it is. So I have absolutely no problem with that. And that's a busy period generally with tourists, etc. But again, it's just, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with that. My problem is the wording and the messaging coming out from different institutions and stuff like that. And, it's been a very tough environment for a lot of businesses the last 19 months. And, I think it's important to have good messaging now rather than, these kind of sound bites coming out about the future. Let's get the messaging towards, our industry, which is the hospitality industry, good now, as opposed to the sound bites that are coming out. So I've no problem with an extra bank holiday. I probably question the extremity of having a 4-day one, but Good Friday is gone now, is gone, so maybe that was always traditionally a 4-day
and the bank holiday Monday
so that's gone, so this replaces it. So there's no difference really from that aspect, but so that'd be my opinion on it. I'd obviously like to see, especially the HSC, the nurses and doctors who've absolutely been downtrodden for the last 2 years dealing with this COVID crisis. So I'd like to see them being rewarded. But as the former person said there, who was on the phone, are they actually going to see the fruits of that? I doubt it, because if they're overrun now. And, this COVID isn't going away anytime soon. Are they going to be in a position to take days off that week? And, money is all very well and, getting double pay or whatever it is or a day in lieu. But,
public holiday benefit is a paid day off on the public holiday, obviously. That's one option. Yeah. An additional day of annual leave, that's another option. An additional day's pay. You're entitled to a day's pay.
Absolutely, yeah. But you're not celebrating the actual day you know what I mean? You could be celebrating on a Monday in July, but it won't feel, as pointed to you doing a great job,
And by the way, how is it? You're saying, you're right, because one sense of tarnish is admitting this. February the 4th is gone in 2022 because it's just so unpredictable at the moment.
Yeah.
March, 6 weeks subsequent?
Yeah, unpredictable as well.
It's unpredictable as well. Yeah, that is the problem. And Sean, how are you situated for Christmas? Given the,
We've had loads of cancellations, but we're a small enough restaurant to kind of overcome that. And, we've had cancellations for office parties, and that's fine for us because we're a small restaurant, so we can fill them with two tops and four tops, etc. But the whole messaging around hospitality is, you know, number one I'd like to say is that the messaging should be that every person, every institution and every industry should be doing their best to keep everybody else safe and do the right things at the right time. That should be the only on-point messaging system. But I really take, you know, the hospitality industry is taking a battering, you know, as in, you know, anytime it seems like, you know, it seems anytime the government want to make a point to people, they close down bits of hospitality or they put in new restrictions. And you had the CMO saying this like last week, that we closed the nightclub and bars and restaurants at 12 o'clock. He doesn't think it's going to make much of a difference in the greater scheme of things, but it does kind of send out that message. But why are we being used to send out that message? You know, we're doing, for, you know, for an industry, and I've seen it myself, I don't know if you go out in the last month or two, but, you know, the overwhelming majority are doing the right things. We're checking certs, checking ID. We've got ventilation. Like, I spend a good portion of my night explaining to people why it's cold in the restaurant, because we need ventilation, we need to keep the air clean, and that's an important aspect of what we're trying to do. But, you know, that's per communication from the government, not stating that ventilation, you know, whether it's in a restaurant, whether it's on a bus or a dark, that that's an important part of keeping people safe.
So would you, if things are as bad as they are in the last week or so, and the government said, well, we're going to have to do something about hospitality, and the default option in hospitality seems to be to shut it down. But if they turned around and said everyone going into your restaurant or a restaurant would have to do an antigen test, obviously you'd do it beforehand, but would that make a difference? Would that help?
Absolutely, and they should be doing that anyway, and they should be doing that for the last 6 months. I mean, they're starting off in schools next Monday. So if you're putting it into a place that has an enclosed area with multiples of people, then it makes sense that you do it for restaurants as well.
Okay, that you do the antigen test. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
But, so, but the other important thing about antigen tests is that they should be freely available to everybody, because not everybody is in an affordable situation to actually get them. So, again, there's been no clear messaging about that either. And, you know,
but I think, in fairness, what paper was it in yesterday? I think it was the Mail or the Irish. But anyway, they were doing a checklist of the cost of antigen tests. And the cheapest antigen tests are £4, and you can get them in Lidl, Aldi or Dunnes stores. Yeah. But you'll pay up to £11 or £12 in other outlets. But anyway, so I think that's the point that Tony should make. Why, if Dunnes can sell them at £4 and Lidl can sell them at £4, why can't everyone else sell them at £4 and we'll throw in €2 to sell them at half price?
He's just cured capitalism there.
Okay. Declan Alcock, Declan.
How are you, Joe? How's things?
You hardly over Alcar on McClare.
I did, yeah. It's been discussed for a while. I've been
he said it a few times. Okay.
No, you see, the first one about, they were talking about having it maybe in the early in the year, like, say, people were mentioning St. Bridget's Day.
Yeah,
that's fine.
February
1st, yeah. But even, like, what I would really think is that over the years, St. Patrick's Day falls on different days of the week. Now, sometimes it's kind of, it doesn't serve its purpose as a particular as a break for people if it's in midweek. There's not really a whole lot you can do the day after it or the day before. But what I think is that Patrick's Day, you could move it to the nearest, like, still have 17th of March, but the public holiday be moved to the nearest Monday and throw in the Tuesday as well. And that way, then you would have a proper.
But Declan, do you know why St. Patrick's Day is marked on the 17th of March?
Why? Go on.
It's because the day St. Patrick died in 461 AD.
But you're like, I mean, Joe, like, I mean, Easter Monday has changed from different days, you know, that type of thing.
And that's a church holiday. Yeah,
yeah. I would have looked on St. Patrick's Day as church day as well.
Yeah,
I mean, I was listening to him this morning saying about maybe making it a 4 day. That's fine. But I think a long term, you could, like, instead of giving the public holiday, say, in February or something, like, hold on, people are just getting themselves together after the end of the year, getting back to normal, and it would be a midterm break for people to look forward to. Move Patrick's Day to Monday and throw in the Tuesday as well, and you'd have a proper break then.
Yeah, but the challenge is, do you know, I only discovered this because I was up speaking in the St. Patrick's, the wonderful St. Patrick's Centre in Downpatrick a few weeks ago, about a book, and St. Patrick's Day is the single most celebrated and marked national holiday in the world.
Yeah, but you can still have the 17th of March. That's
fine, but you can't say to the Australians and the Americans and the Canadians and the Guatemalans and the Argentinians who mark St. Patrick's Day, you can't say to them all, listen, will you recalibrate next year? St. Patrick's Day, I think next year is on a Thursday.
Yeah, Joe, in some countries, in some places they'd have the parade, in some cities around the world they'd have it the nearest Sunday or the nearest Monday.
But it is the single most, I know it's Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving to all our American listeners.
It's a holiday, even if it's not that, and some people were talking about, I've heard it on your show previously, about St. Bridget's Day, but even St. Bridget's Day can fall any day of the week, but still start from the beginning and have it at the nearest Monday. A public holiday midweek is totally pointless. It doesn't work out as it should and everything like that. But I still would advocate the extra holiday, an extra day for St. Patrick's Day in the long term.
But you see...
But move to Monday and throw in the Tuesday as well. Yeah, or the Friday. Joe, you could throw in the Friday either now.
You're very generous. But Declan, this is BC, before COVID.
Yeah.
Every St. Patrick's Day in Ireland, whether it was a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, people went crazy drinking.
Yes, I understand that, yeah.
So it didn't bother them that they had to go to work or school or creche the next day.
Well, you did have problems the day after, and you still would have problems the day after.
It's even
the whole thing about trying to find people to work on the days and things. I mean, I don't want to go into it now in detail, but for example, if I worked on a public holiday, I'm not on a 9-to-5, but if my roster fell on a Monday, you're given a day extra. It's part of an annual leave, or it's part of an extra day. Fine. Guardy nurses, people, that's what to do, whatever. But I'm just saying, but I think you'll move the Patrick's Day to the Monday, the nearest Monday, and then throw in the Tuesday as well, and you'll have a proper midterm break, and everybody's something that we could all look forward to. When you get to January, it'll be something to look forward to down the line. People could, you know. We're down the road in a few years.
And every year we could send a stonemason up to Downpatrick where St. Patrick is buried getting to chisel a different date on it. Stay there, Declan. John, you're a frontline worker. What do you think of this 4-day St. Patrick's Day weekend?
I think it's pointless, Joe.
Why?
You know, you're giving somebody who works most bank holidays an extra bank holiday. And in fairness, we will get time off in lieu. But sometimes it's very difficult to actually take that time off because we're very stretched, and it'd just be lost with your holidays. It wouldn't seem like a token of appreciation at all, if you know what I mean. I think a one-off payment in the form of a tax credit, fair to everybody. Same payment, everybody gets it. Revenue could just write to the job, tell them.
It's a tax credit.
Yeah, there's no money change hands. You're only actually getting your own money back. But it would be a token of appreciation.
And why would you not be in favour of the extra day?
Because when you have 21 days annual leave, to give another day's annual leave, it just gets lost in your annual leave. It doesn't feel like a token of appreciation. And it's all about boosting morale at this stage, Joe. It's not even about the amount. It's just to boost. Give them a bit of a boost.
Get us out of this national trauma we're going through, yeah.
I mean, there was a big article in the Indo today about the stress of ICU workers. If you tell an ICU worker they're going to get another day's annual leave when they can't get their ordinary annual leave because we're also understaffed. I think it's a little bit pointless.
And are you working in a hospital, John? Or?
I am, yes.
Yeah, okay. And how's that going for you at the minute?
It's extremely busy.
Yeah. And what do you do in the hospital? Are you a medic or a surgeon? I'm a
healthcare assistant on a cardiac unit.
Well done.
Extremely busy.
Yeah, I can imagine. Good.
Because despite COVID, bypasses get done.
Yeah, of course. They have
to, get done. Valve replacements get done. And to be honest, Joe, I'm very lucky. I work for probably the best one of the best hospitals in the country. Mm-hmm. It is private, but I've often thought our management should run the HSA because we're so efficient. You know, if we run the HSA, it might work a little bit better.
Okay, okay, okay. John, thanks indeed, and thanks for your service. Declan as well, and Sean Drugan in the Vintage in Poolbeg Street. Thank you and all the staff from hospitality to retail that have been going through all of this. And Tom, back after this.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Aoife is a student, a third year student in the Waterford Institute of Technology. Aoife, what's the issue?
Hi Joe. Our issue is that our campus won't put our exams online. I know last year with COVID our exams went online. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have a problem with that. We all felt safe. This year we don't feel safe doing our exams in campus, in small rooms with the doors and windows open, not allowing to have water, having a 15-minute break between exams, and being told that we're to be forced into small rooms.
Okay, now Aoife, let's try and get a better line there because it's an important point you're making. Emer has contacted us as well, and it's about the same issue, but this time it's Trinity College in Dublin. Again, Emer, go ahead.
Yeah, hi Joe, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm in my final year studies. Okay. In Trinity, and as scheduled at the moment, we have in-person exams.
Okay.
Our first 6 weeks of college were fully online.
Okay.
And after that, we were in person. However, as things have worked since over the last few weeks, a lot of lecturers have moved their classes online, which is understandable.
Okay.
But some lecturers are still expecting us to go get our exams in the RDS, where I think the limit is 1,600 students. So it just seems it's a bit strange that they don't think they can come in and teach us.
So you're saying most, and Trinity for a long time, the lectures were online, like most third level.
Yeah.
Last year, the exams were online, and you're saying this year, you have to go to, the RDS? It's the next week and the week after. It's December, isn't it? December exams.
Yeah.
And you said there'd be 1,000 students in one room.
Yeah, so we got an email last week from the college, and they said that there's going to be a reduced capacity, but it's still 1,600. So that's quite worrying for students. And also a huge thing is that, God forbid, one of us was to get sick or be a close contact, we obviously wouldn't be able to sit our exams, and we'd then have to do them in August. They're not creating any other time period for us. And for final-year students like myself, a lot of us have grad offers and master's offers, and we need results. So
okay. Stay there, Aoife, back after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Aoife is in Waterford Technology. You've been told the exams are in-person exams this year. But you also mentioned that you have a vulnerable family member at home, so you're extra worried.
Yeah, I do. My exams don't finish until the 21st of December,
okay.
Which means I go home then for Christmas. But unfortunately, I have a vulnerable member at home. So if I get COVID, then I can't go home for Christmas. And the same as Emer, if we get COVID between exams, we're told we have to sit them in August.
And Aoife, last year, I know you're third year, so did you sit online exams last year?
Yeah, I did.
Was there problems at the college end or the student end or the marking end or the vigilating end?
There was no problems with it then. I think personally it's just a better idea, especially with COVID so high at the moment. And our college doesn't seem to be acknowledging that.
Okay, and Emer was making the same point. She said we're going to be, hopefully the line's a bit better. Now, Emer, you say 1,500 people in the RDS. All the lectures, well, it seems most of the lectures have been online. There was a lot of pressure from students, and there was in-person lectures, at least partially. And they've gone, are you saying most of your lectures have gone back online in Trinity, Emer?
So half of mine have gone back online in the last week. And again, they were the same ones, everything for the first 6 weeks was online. So for some classes, I've only had 3 in-person sessions.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you've been told there's no budging at the minute from Trinity. They're in-person exams.
Yeah, that's what we've been told so far.
No ifs or buts. Can you say I have a vulnerable person or vulnerable family member? Or?
Well, that's really one of the main issues. We just haven't been told. There's been such a lack of communication from Trinity itself.
And you need the results of those at Christmas exams in terms of, depends on your course, but in terms of applying for jobs in various firms. Okay, stay there, Eimear. Sarah Dunn is in Carrick, I'm sure. What college are you involved in, Sarah?
Hi, Joe. I'm also in WIT in the Institute of Technology. I'm in the College Street campus myself. We have several different campuses around the city.
And when are your in-person exams?
So our first exam would be on the 17th of December, and then our final exam for my own course is on the 23rd of December.
And they're definitely in person?
As of right now, the registrar has told us that the decision to remain online is due to the fact that there's no government guidelines telling them that they have to go in person or that they have to go online, so they're remaining in person.
Okay, but are your lectures online?
No, our lectures are in person as well. And
that's coming from the registrar.
Well,
what percentage of the lectures are in person?
100%.
Okay, well, that's different to Trinity now.
Yeah, so we've been online, like all of our second year. I'm also a final year student myself. I'm studying law. Mm-hmm. And for the entirety of second year for us, it was online, 100%. And then come September, I suppose the numbers were down, things were looking well. But as the year has progressed, those numbers have risen. And in Waterford in particular, they've skyrocketed. I'm a mature student with an underlying illness. It worries me really to be on campus. I know that we have to take our own personal responsibility, and to my own lectures, the ones that I have, they are keeping their distance. They're making sure we're wearing masks, but you know, we don't know who we're going to be in a room with when it comes to an exam. You're shoving us all in like sardines to a can, and it's very worrying at the end of the day.
And what is the import of these exams? Are these effectively your finals?
These will be, so for the Christmas exams and the summer exams combined will give us our grade we get at the end. So it is really the make or break of us as final year students.
So if for whatever reason you miss these exams in the next few weeks, but in other words, you're worried or... If you miss them, you've got to sit them then, what, next August, and then your other exams are pushed out again. Is that it?
So the way that Waterford operates, and I'm assuming other colleges do as well, is that you can apply for a mitigating circumstance.
Okay.
Now, this year and last year, they said if you're putting down COVID as a mitigating circumstance, there's no questions asked. You know, you don't need to produce medical certs or things like that. But what happens is, instead of you having, we'll say, the safety net of a repeat, you just do the exam as a repeat. So you do it in August, and if you pass or fail, that's the end of it. Whereas at least now, if you do it in December, you don't do well, you have a safety net of a repeat later. But you don't get that if you have to put on a mitigating circumstances. And then, as the student from Trinity said, final year students were applying for different things. Maybe some people are applying for the bar, some people are applying for masters and graduate programs, and we need those results to be able to apply properly and secure
our
places.
Well, things are changing so rapidly, and it is it's not a linear, it's an oxymoron to call anything a linear pandemic, because it's a contagion. Mm-hmm. So it's not linear. So the college can't be at Trinity or Waterford or whatever, they can't set everything in stone now, can they?
That's it. That's what we thought. You know, as students, I suppose, we assume that everything is being monitored, and that as everything progresses and changes, that everything went online last year. It's not too out of the blue to say that it will go online this year. And I know people get worried, like, you know, with connections to the internet and in rural Ireland, maybe you don't have as good a connection. And I understand that they need to take those types of things into consideration. But at the end of the day, for the majority of students, they need to think. And it's not just students, Joe. It's staff as well. It's also forgotten that the staff are being put into these positions, whether they're cleaners, whether they're the canteen staff, the porters, everybody is at risk. It's not just us students that are in a little high-risk bubble. Anyone on campus is at risk.
Well, point very well made, Sarah. Stay there for a sec, the three. I want to let in a frontline worker about the husband of a frontline worker about this double bank holiday. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
What is the reaction to this whole idea of a bank holiday to say thank you to our frontline workers?
I think the idea of a bank holiday, and especially one around St. Bridget's Day, would be a brilliant idea in respect of all women. But the bank holiday doesn't benefit. It benefits everybody, but it doesn't benefit the frontline healthcare workers, because they're the ones that will probably be working it. Speaking to my wife and our colleagues, they would prefer to have better paying conditions, and in particular conditions.
Okay.
Because they are, for the last 20 months, they have been working a hell of a shift.
Mm-hmm.
And in my wife's case, she had 4 days off last week, the first 4 days off in 2 years.
Good God.
Yeah, because they're so short-staffed that she gets a call to come in, can she cover her shift or whatever, and she does it because she's local to the hospital and she'll do it. But it's not.
So, John, just come back again, John. You're saying in the last 2 years,
yep.
How many days has she had off?
In total, about 10.
Okay.
In total, but that would be holidays.
Has she had any? No, has she had 2 weeks holidays? We just did.
No. I know it sounds strange, Joe, but that's the type of person that she is. And it's the type of person that she would be repeated right across the whole healthcare system. Because they're not particularly interested in bank holidays. And my wife, when the Minister for Health was at her unit there recently, asked her about this. And she told him, look, just improve the conditions under which we work. We don't care about holidays. So
the minister asked her what she thought of the idea of a bank holiday.
Yeah, just in a brief conversation.
Yeah, of course,
he was there to officially to open a unit belonging to them. And she said, look, come down to A&E and have a look at what's going on.
We need more. Okay, Nuala. Nuala.
Hi, Joe.
Another bank holiday, a double one on Patrick's Day, to thank frontline workers, and then from there on in, from 2023, a bank holiday in honour of a woman, St. Bridget, or the Celtic goddess before that. Nuala, your point, please.
Well, I think it's ridiculous, Joe, giving the whole country another bank holiday. This is all supposed to be about frontline people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a frontline people. Anyway, what I think we should do is, I think we should give the frontline people extra money.
Yeah.
I think it's so unfair to say this is all about the frontline people.
Well, as people are pointing out, a bank holiday, now I know the state is a big employer, but the bank holiday is paid for by employers. It's the employers that have to pay double pay or whatever. And it's not, I know, apart from the people the government employ directly. So it falls on small businesses, medium businesses or whatever. But you say they should. What should they give them? A money that can be taxed, or should give them a voucher that can be spent?
So a voucher that could be spent would be far better, Joe.
Okay.
Just let them be appreciated properly.
And what they should do, I think, is they should say to put it out to tender, what companies, what stores, what shops or whatever are willing to give us a 500 quid voucher for 450 or 400 or whatever. It would be worth our while. That's the way they should do it. But anyway, Pat, Nuala, Emer, Sarah and John, different issues being raised. Back tomorrow, 1:45, Lisa Marie Berry produced, Cara Hares on sound, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline, eRadio 1 with Kia. Discover our 2-to-1 offers at your local Kia dealer. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.